entertainer, and entrepreneur answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Larry Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Human gaffe machine is at it again. Vice President Joe Biden has proved he is still suffering from chronic foot-in-mouth disease. First, he slams fellow Democrats Hillary, hey, I'm a granny now, Clinton, and Leon Panetta for disagreeing with his clean-cut and articulate president. Now he disparages our ally, Turkey, and their policies on how to handle terrorism in their own backyard. I wonder when he supposedly showed his wife how to fire a shotgun in the air. Could some of the lead have fallen back down on his head? Remember, lead causes brain damage. But not the American Adversaries at Drive Time, on AM 660. The answer, Lair Adams, here with you. And our host has no mercury in his mouth or lead in his head, Christopher Hart.
All right. Thanks so much, Lair Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us here on this Monday afternoon. Fall is here, and the American Adversaries are on Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer. And don't forget, you can join us as well at 407-774-8255. And that's right. We are coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. Don't forget, if you want to get that mercury out of your head, and I bet you Joe Biden's got a mouthful of it. We've got a mouthful of something else, too. But just go and give my dear friend Dr. James he already a call at 407-678-3399. All right, we got a big show lined up for you tonight. But just a real quick reminder, if you missed last night's show or would like to hear it again, I believe it was another good one. Just go to, we especially had fun with our Who Was That contest last night. We got a lot of comments about that today, too.
Finally, but, somebody got it.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that. But if you want to hear that show, you can hear it repeatedly, of course, after the show tonight, at our website, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com. And we appreciate all you folks who are taking advantage of that. Okay. Abe Katzman's going to be joining us here in the second segment of the show. It is Monday, and it's Abe Katzman Day, if you will. Nostra Dennis won't be able to be with us today, but he'll be back tomorrow. We've got a lot to talk about with Abe. But before we get to that, I just would like to thank our new sponsor, Just Toys Classic Cars, and Mike Smith and the guys over there. They really do a great job. I can't wait to take a tour of the facility. It's a 20,000 square foot facility down there in Taft on the south side of town. And if you would like to go down there, if you'd just like to call them and thank them for being a sponsor of our show, their number down there is 407-251-7335. And just listen up for the commercial later on in the show. It'll be playing in the 45 break, the third break, we call it. And once again, thanks to Mike Smith and the guys at Just Toys Classic Cars. And not only do they sell classic cars, but they'll also sell yours on consignment. So if you've got one that you'd like to turn, maybe to buy another one, they'll help you out do that down there. So it's a great opportunity for us to help them out and them to help us out. So we need you to get in the process to make all that work. So just go on down there and take a look around. It's like going to a car show. You know, I love looking at old cars like that. Larry remembers the old 64 T-Bird I had.
I was kind of surprised you sold it, but you know, you do that with cars.
Yeah, I still wish I had it back. But
yeah, but it'd be a toy. It'd just be something to have. You wouldn't be driving around town, be afraid to mess it up.
Yeah, I remember the first time I went to change the oil in it. couldn't find the oil filter. So I called my brother because it came from our father, and he said, oh, well, there's no oil filter. And I said, well, no oil filter? He said, no, because with that car, the engine is so big, there was no place to put it under the hood. And boy, would this thing get down the road, too, just swoop down like a
well,
like a hawk.
Nothing filtered the oil?
No. Nope. You just had to change the oil. Mm. All right, so, but, yeah.
Maybe I'll stop changing mine.
Big old 394 barrel carburetor, and boy, that thing would get down the road. All right, but thanks again to Just
Gallons
Toys.
Per mile, right?
Yeah, I got about 12 on the highway.
Yeah.
All right, but it was a real fun to drive. Had the sideways sliding steering wheel. Have you ever seen those where it slides to the side?
On purpose?
Yeah.
Oh, so for you get in and out easier.
Exactly.
I got gotcha. You.
Yeah, if you're
I
a stout gotcha. Person or something like that.
But it was cheaper, fun.
It was fun not to tell people about that and see them get in the car because you would pull the shift lever a little bit and it would go sliding. And
okay.
People's eyes would get real big.
I'm losing the wheel.
And the air conditioner sat in the back seat.
I
you
remember
plugged
those.
It into the cigarette lighter.
That was an add-on.
And it had a fan, and mm-hmm. you put ice in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
That's what
I remember you could order those in the catalog.
Yes. Real leather seats, though. Nice car. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, just toys, classic cars. Once again, want to thank them and thank all of our other sponsors as well. And, you know, guys like Pasquale Barba and Aubrey Kahn and David Levitt and Mara Lee, Vacation Travel Planners, just the whole gang. You know, we really, really appreciate all of them. All right. Before we get to Abe, you know, big news was made today at the Supreme Court. You know, it's the first Monday in October. That's the day they go back in session. And they did make big news and big law, if you will, by not doing anything. It's one of those things, was the old, the saying I think originated from the philosopher Sartre, however you want to pronounce it, Sartre. Mm-hmm. And then it ended up in a Rush song. You remember Rush, that three-member band from Canada? If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
In the case for the Supreme Court, if they choose not to decide, they still have made a decision. And the decision today is, I guess you could look at it either one or both of two ways. One, it was a victory for states' rights in a sense. And then, of course, it was a victory for gays. Happy days for gays is how I've got it written in our outline here.
Well, they basically kicked the can down the road.
I don't think that they even did that. I think they kicked the can out the door. Basically, they said, we are going to let lower federal court decisions stand. And what that is saying is basically we agree with those lower federal court decisions. So it's only a matter of time, I believe, in the state of Florida and the other 19 or 20 mm-hmm. states that are now left, that there'll be a sympathetic federal court found in those districts, or that those states are in those federal districts, and those judges will do likewise, and it'll be a done deal. I think basically that's the message that the Supreme Court sent today. And now we have three cases here in Florida that started out in the state district courts. And they will make their way, I'm sure, into the federal courts via the state Supreme Court, depending on how the state Supreme Court could side with gay marriage and strike down the state amendment. And then there would be no recourse, in my opinion.
Well, I really have to wonder, Chris, what would happen if the numbers had been reversed? If that many states were against it and the ones that are against it now are for it, I really wonder if the Supreme
Excellent
Court
question.
Would have gone that direction.
Excellent question.
I think they took the easy way out.
The Supreme Court, and this is one reason why they are lifetime appointees, is supposed to be above and beyond the political fray.
Yeah, right.
But we know that mm-hmm. if you study the court throughout history, you know that that is not the case. Many of the decisions that came out of the Warren Court, and the Warren Court, of course, was famous for Brown versus Board of Education and other decisions, very liberal decisions, because that was the direction that society was going in general.
Mm-hmm.
And no one stood up against it. And this kind of takes me back to what Rafael Cruz was saying last weekend, not this past weekend, but the weekend before when he was in town here. You know, when society as a whole was being pushed to the left by progressives, and it started in the early part of the 20th century,
mm-hmm.
in the early 1900s, and progressed all throughout that century and began to culminate in massive moves to the left in the 60s and the 70s, there was no one really to stand in the way. And so the court just went with the flow. And that's what I believe we're seeing going on now. And it may be that the perception of support for gay marriage is overblown, but as we've talked about on this show before, in politics especially and in life in general, perception is reality.
Mm-hmm.
What you believe is what is real to you. And if this is what the political elite believe that the direction of the country is going, well, that's good enough for them. And law, well, I guess that goes out the door at some point. We're going to try to get Steve Gushov of the Liberty Council on to get their opinion of it. I know Matt Staver, he's already been quoted on Salem News saying this, you know, this is a big blow for defenders of traditional marriage. And I believe it is basically the end of the fight. They basically have said the lower court's decisions stand, and that's fine with us. And those lower court decisions have opened the door to gay marriage.
Well, Chris, this is what happens when you have one party that really has all the power and another party that won't open their mouths because they're so frightened. The Republicans are going to keep their mouths shut.
Well, all right.
Because they're gutless.
Well, but if that's what you're looking for, people to keep their mouths shut, you've come to the wrong place, because that is not us around here.
No!
And when we come back, we got another man who likes to tell it like it is, too. Abe Katzman will be joining us live from Jerusalem, so please do not go away. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, if you're out there on the road again, you got a beautiful day of driving ahead of you. But please just take your time and get there safe and sound. And listen to us along the way. We are the American Adversaries. It is Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer. 407-774-8255 is the number. And it's time now for our man live from Jerusalem. And, of course, we're talking about Abe Katzman. Abe, how you doing tonight?
Doing great. Good to be with you.
Well, thank you very much, and we appreciate you being with us.
Always great to hear from you, sir.
Is it appropriate to say happy Yom Kippur, even though it was just this past weekend?
This late.
Yeah, even though I'm late.
It's always appropriate to wish somebody a happy holiday. I'm not sure happy Yom Kippur is really the appropriate greeting. Yom Kippur is kind of the most somber and serious day on the Jewish calendar, but that's okay. I know where it's coming from, and everyone appreciates it.
That's why I asked that. What would be a more appropriate thing, say, one Jew would say to another on that occasion?
Well, this is still part of the beginning of the Jewish New Year, so you can still wish people a happy Jewish New Year.
Yeah. Yeah, I was intrigued by it. I was watching a ceremony in a synagogue on TV, and it was like explaining what was going on, and I didn't exactly realize what was all involved, but I can see, you know, why you say it's a very somber situation. You know, the naming in the books and the restarting and all of that, very heavy stuff.
It is. It's very heavy, and now that it's behind us, we can get on with enjoying the rest of the holidays.
Okay. All right. Abe, I want to start off with the Prime Minister. Benjamin Netanyahu was on Fake the Nation yesterday morning with Bob Schieffer, and he said one of the things that he said, it reminded me of the way you say he has a way with words, and he described his relationship with the president as sort of like an old married couple. Are you familiar with what he's talking about? Are you familiar with the interview?
I'm familiar with the interview. I mean, I know that what set this off was the announcement. It wasn't even really an announcement, but the notice that was given last week of two things. One was some construction of a new neighborhood in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And another was that some Jewish families had bought homes in an Arab neighborhood and were moving in. And the White House had been very highly critical of both of those plans and said that they were poisoning the atmosphere. So Netanyahu came back and said he was completely baffled by this criticism, that there's no reason, just like in America, no reason that Arabs and Jews can't live wherever Arabs and Jews choose to live.
Exactly.
And he also went on to say that he doesn't think that the president's criticisms reflect
American values.
Values, yes.
Yeah.
And I think
the White House was not pleased with that. They came back today with a response that was really somewhat of a non sequitur, basically saying that he didn't appreciate how much help the U.S. has given to Israel. It didn't even make sense.
Yeah, well, what does one have to do with the other?
Yeah, I would say help despite the president and his policies. But I think it was an appropriate criticism, and I think that it was on a level that perhaps they got. But because what he was saying is that the Obama administration is not living up to the American ideal of justice and equality and all that sort of thing that they go around preaching all the time.
The nation of laws.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, what they're preaching in this case would get somebody a major fine if they tried pulling the same kind of stunt here in America in terms of segregation.
Right, exactly.
That's really what they're asking for.
By the way,
the new neighborhood. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. The new neighborhood. What?
I was going to say, even the new neighborhood that's being built is being built for both Jewish and Arab residents.
I was going to ask that, and I was also going to ask this: the house that was sold. You say it was an Arab who sold the house to a Jew. Presumably, the Arab knew who he was selling it to, didn't he? Or she?
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. So obviously the Arab didn't have a problem with it, and it does. It likens back to, you know, neighborhoods in here, say in the South, where, you know, you didn't want your white neighbor selling his house to a black man. It's the same exact thing, and it's ironic, of course, that this is coming from the quote unquote first black president.
Well, I understand that it's a little bit more complex here because America still views Jerusalem as the status of Jerusalem as something that is not yet settled. Even though the president himself, when he was a candidate, once said that he did not foresee Jerusalem ever being divided again, the way that he's governed and with the policies of his administration, it seems pretty clear that he would like he would actually like a final status agreement to involve a Palestinian state in the eastern neighborhoods of Jerusalem, a Palestinian capital in the eastern neighborhoods of Jerusalem. The Israeli position is Jerusalem will never be divided again. It was artificially divided as a result of an armistice line in 1949. So for 19 years it was divided. And it will never be divided again. It is Israel's eternal capital. It's been Jewish for 3,000 years, and they're not about to turn half of it over to create a new foreign capital.
Well, how well did it work for Berlin to be a divided capital? Didn't work so well there either, did it? All right?
Yeah, but we're talking Barack Obama here, Chris. He knows better.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to look at history and history's mistakes. He knows better.
Yeah. Abe, while we're talking about the relationship between the Obama administration and Israel, because the Prime Minister is absolutely right, and you've expressed this on the show before, too, the American people's opinion toward Israel is very opposed to that of this administration, at least the vast majority of us anyway. And but there's a story that is breaking today that Barack Obama sent an emissary, one of his staffers from Department of Homeland Security, to thank the imam and the mosque that the Oklahoma City, this guy, what's his name, Nolan, the fellow who cut the grandmother's head off, a thank you note to that mosque, which, by the way, was started by a former member, I believe, of Hamas. Has that story come out in Israel at all?
I haven't seen it yet, but if it's just breaking today, it'll probably be in tomorrow morning's papers.
Yeah, I believe it's up on Breitbart. But having heard that, is the reaction in Israel going to be, well, oh, ho, hum, more of the same?
I expect it would be. In fact, the attitude toward President Obama here is such that this rift has actually caused the prime minister's poll numbers to go up.
Gosh, that's terrible.
Well,
Obama's actually doing Netanyahu a favor.
Well, he's certainly not doing himself any favors Obama's poll numbers.
Yeah, I'm listening here, Abe, thinking, God help you people till Obama's out of office.
God help us all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Abe, we're coming up on the break. Can you stay with us through the break?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, because I want to talk to you about what's going on in Europe. Did you see what Sweden did?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that. And also, I want to talk to you about the Ebola crisis and what Israel may be doing to protect your nation. Maybe some lessons we could learn from you.
Yeah, you're just going to open up your airports to anybody who wants to come in from Liberia, right?
I hardly think so. All right, Abe, thanks, and stick with us. We're going right to the news. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the American Adversaries in Drive Time on AM 660, The Answer.
And, of course, we have our great friend and a very intelligent fellow that gives us the real stuff from Israel. That's Abe Katzman. He'll be back with us when we come back. Don't forget that phone number, 407-774-8255. AM 660, The Answer, and the American Adversaries.
And away we go, and we got one tough guy on the line with us, coming to us live from Jerusalem. And of course, that's our man, Abe Katzman. And by the way, folks, he's a great columnist, and you can find his work at abekatzman.com. All right, when it's not making its way around all the other publications like Breitbart and others. All right, Abe, thanks again for holding with us through the break. I want to ask you about what Sweden did. Evidently, over the weekend or in the past couple of days, their new center-left government is going to, they've announced that they are going to, and maybe you can update me, maybe they already have, they're going to recognize the state of Palestine. It'll be the first major European country to do so. Have they already done so, and what's the thinking in Israel about this?
Well, they said they're going to. It was a little bit shocking in Israel that a European country would actually go ahead and recognize the so-called state of Palestine. They've backpedaled a little bit on it. They've tried to explain their position as now being one where what they're recognizing is the future state of Palestine in accordance with whatever kind of agreement comes from bilateral negotiations. In a way, they've pulled back. It doesn't look like an outright recognition at this point.
Okay. In other words, now it's, well, we'll recognize it when you establish it, sort of thing.
Yeah, they've left it very ambiguous.
All right. Well,
it's not a clear cut recognition currently of the state of Palestine.
What kind of surprised me was that it was Sweden. If I had read France, I might have said, well, yeah, it kind of makes a little sense. I mean, I believe you've told us on the show how Jews are leaving France by the droves. We know that there's a strong Muslim population there because of immigration. But Sweden.
And anti-Semitism.
Yeah, but Sweden was kind of out of the blue, wasn't it?
Yes and no. The truth is that and this is always surprising to people, that the Scandinavian countries actually have a strong anti-Semitic tradition.
Do they?
So there's which is very counterintuitive, I think. Everybody assumes that they're good, laid-back Scandinavians like we all know them to be.
Right.
But for some reason, they've got issues when it comes to their treatment of the Jews. They did, I will give them credit, in World War II, Sweden saved a number of Jews who were fleeing from the Nazis. But in terms of their relationship with Israel, it's always been rocky. For whatever reasons, Sweden, Ireland, Malta, those are really the three countries whose governments have been toughest on the Israeli government.
Wow. You know, this has troubled Lair, and I know it really troubles Lair. It troubles me, too, about this anti-Semitism in Europe, as strong as it is. So this past Sunday, or Saturday, when I got my Wall Street Journal, I opened it up, and it's in the book review section. I noticed this article, and it really, you know, it kind of struck home. It's entitled, Europe's Scary New Anti-Semitism. A subtitle, Attacks and Hateful Rhetoric Are on the Rise, and It's Not Just Jews Who Should Worry. And it's by Jonathan Sachs, and it describes Jonathan Sachs. He is the Emeritus Chief Rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregation of the British Commonwealth. He currently teaches at New York University. He says that the current, this new wave, as he calls it, of anti-Semitism, he thinks was launched at the UN Conference Against Racism at Durban, South Africa in 2001. He writes, at this conference there, Israel was accused of the five cardinal sins against human rights. Israel was accused of racism, apartheid, crimes against humanity, ethnic cleansing, and attempted genocide. And he goes on to describe of the UN half, he says, half of all UN resolutions adopted by the UN Human Rights Council since 2006, when the council was established, in criticism of a particular country have been directed at Israel. Isn't the UN itself at the root of a lot of this anti-Semitism, Abe?
The UN certainly is at the root of it. It's always difficult to try to pin down an exact date when a wave of anti-Semitism began. The UN has a history that goes back. I mean, it was in 1975, I think, that the UN declared that Zionism was a form of racism. It doesn't get much worse than that from the UN.
No.
Ultimately, they repealed that in the 1990s, but that was on the books for a long time. So it goes back a ways.
Yeah, let me just finish this paragraph. He writes also, the UN General Assembly adopted a total of 21 resolutions singling out Israel for censure, according to the UN Watch. And only four resolutions to protest the actions of the rest of the world's states. You trying to tell me that Israel was guilty of more sins than Syria and what's going on in Libya and all these other countries? Come on. This is just beyond the pale.
Well, this is kind of the bizarre world of international diplomacy. This is what goes on at the UN. They are obsessed with Israel. You're right. I mean, you know, Iran and North Korea and Syria and Libya and who knows. It's a long, long list of countries where there are all kinds of atrocities going on. And yet democratic Israel, where both Arabs and Jews have equal civil rights, that's the one country that they look at to blame anything they can on.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I hope when we get a new administration that they will take steps to try to put an end to that, because it is going to do is fan the flames of anti-Semitism and make the problem worse and worse and worse. As the Jews... Go ahead, Abe.
I was going to say that there's only so much that any administration can do, but there are things that can be done. The Bush administration left the UN Human Rights Council because it was, again, made up of all the worst human rights violators.
Right.
And spent all of its time obsessing over supposed Israeli crimes.
Oh, Barack would love that.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, well, the Obama administration decided to get back in. So they rejoined, and they supposedly with the idea that they would reform it. Well, they haven't reformed anything. It's as bad as it's ever been. And I would expect that if the next president is a Republican, that he will also pull out of the Human Rights Council.
Let's only hope so. All right. Abe, let's talk just a couple minutes about this Ebola thing. How is the Israeli government handling possible contamination, because don't a lot of Jews come from, migrate from Africa, different parts of Africa to Israel? Are there many Jews in Liberia and these other countries where the outbreak is so severe?
There's no Jewish community to speak of in any of the countries that have been affected. The African Jews that have come to Israel come from Ethiopia, and they're already here. So the idea that there would be some kind of new outbreak from the Ethiopian population is not really anything that anyone is worried about. There are a number of refugees who have fled from Eritrea and Sudan that are here, non-Jewish. Those areas are not Ebola areas, but there are other diseases that they've brought with them.
Are your customs officials taking any special precautions, or are your security apparatus already sufficient to protect even against something like this?
I haven't noticed that there's anything new. I don't know that there have been any steps taken. There are no direct flights from Liberia to Israel. I'm not sure what kind of screening they might be doing. They do very effective screening for security at airports all over the world for flights that are Israel bound. I'm not sure what they do in terms of screening for passenger health.
Now, has your media there, or has anybody asked the government, do they have a plan if you do happen to have an Ebola patient pop up in a hospital?
It has not come up as an issue. I think everybody here is looking at this more as spectators at this point and not worried about an outbreak here. Of course, if the case developed here, there would be, I'm sure, panic along the lines of what there is in America. But so far, I don't think they're too worried.
Okay. Abe, I just got an email from one of our listeners who would like to know, whereabouts in Jerusalem do you live in general terms?
In general, well, I don't know how well he knows Jerusalem, but I live in a neighborhood called Katamon.
Okay.
It is in West Jerusalem. It's about probably a 25 minute walk from the old city. That's a frame of reference that he can use.
Okay. All right. I hope that answered their question. All right. Before we go, the Supreme Court here today declined to make a decision on same-sex marriage, which basically is a decision. I think we've asked you this before, but I want to ask you again. Is same-sex marriage allowed in Israel? And if it is, has it been a big deal?
Same-sex marriage is technically not allowed, but it is recognized. In other words, the government will not the marriage and divorce and all family law is run here by religious courts.
Okay.
Each religion has its own court system. So under the religious systems, they don't allow same-sex marriage. But if a same-sex couple is married elsewhere outside of the country and they move to Israel, their marriage is recognized.
Okay. All right. One last question. It has to do with Lebanon. I saw a report, I believe it was in the paper today, and I can't remember which one because I was reading about three of them, but there's a great deal of worry in Lebanon that the situation in Syria and ISIS and everything is beginning to spill over. Is there a great deal of concern in Israel as well?
Yeah, something that they're watching closely. Both the al-Nusra Front and ISIS have been attacking in Lebanon.
Right.
ISIS has been attacking the Lebanese army troops, and apparently there have been a usual laundry list of atrocities and beheadings and whatever else happens when they take over certain areas. And the al-Nusra Front, which is al-Qaeda, has been fighting Hezbollah. Now, that doesn't bother me so much. I hope that they occupy each other's time for a long time to come.
Right. As a matter of fact, the Prime Minister made that point, I think, a couple of times in the interview that he had with Bob Schieffer yesterday. You know, why do we need to team? I think he was saying, why do we need to even think about teaming up with either Assad or Iran? You know, they're going to be fighting the bad guys anyway. Just let them fight the bad guys.
Sure.
Stay out of their way, basically, right?
Don't get in the crossfire.
Yeah. Abe?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. All right, Abe. Well, I appreciate it. Once again, we thank you so very much for being with us tonight. It's always very enlightening and educational to talk with you. So have a great evening and take care. And once again, happy Jewish New Year.
Thank you. Always good to be with you guys.
Absolutely.
It's great to have you, Abe.
Absolutely. You make so much. You really do enhance our show, and we get lots of thanks for having you on. So we appreciate you very, very much. All right. Once again, folks, that's our man, Abe Katzman, coming to us live from Jerusalem. And you can find his great work at Abe Katzman. That's with the S, AbeKatzman.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Welcome to today's episode of The Dumb and the Feckless. The true story of the Clintons and the Obamas, once again today, is told by Edward Klein in his best-selling new book, Blood Feud, The Clintons versus the Obamas. Page 265, Chapter 33, The Clintons, Triumphant. Shortly before his State of the Union speech in late January 2014, Barack Obama phoned Hillary Clinton to lodge a complaint. Several of his most valuable political operatives, including Jim Messina, who managed Obama's campaign in 2012, had recently been lured away by Bill Clinton to help Hillary win her race for the White House. The raid of Obama's talent pool signaled a tectonic shift in Democratic Party politics. As the New York Times put it, and I quote, "The Messina announcement cements a broader takeover by Clinton allies of the Democratic Party's growing outside spending infrastructure." President Obama didn't mince words when he spoke to Hillary. "Can't you rein in Bill?" he said, according to several sources who were told about the conversation. "I don't want to lose those folks." Hillary laughed at the suggestion that she could stop Bill from hiring away Obama's campaign virtuosos, among them Jeremy Byrd and Mitch Stewart, who led Obama's field operation in 2012, and Buffy Wicks, a highly regarded get-out-the-vote specialist who was named executive director of the pro-Hillary PAC Priorities USA. "Are you serious?" Hillary said. "I can't rein Bill in. Never have, never will." Obama was apoplectic. Within hours of his phone call to Hillary, Valerie Jarrett called a crisis meeting of her staff and lectured them on the virtues of loyalty to the president. "The president has every intention of keeping his team intact after he leaves office," she told them, according to her recollection of the meeting, which she conveyed to a friend. "He has a desire to continue to control the political dialogue and accomplish a progressive agenda. He means to have a major impact for a long time. He's not going to retire or leave the stage after this term. He'll be young, with fire in his belly to get things done. To do that, he needs you, money raisers, and organization. He wants to keep his team together." Jarrett never mentioned the Clintons by name, but it was clear to those who heard her speech that Bill and Hillary were the objects of Obama's displeasure. "It's Bill's revenge. That's how they see it in the White House," said one of Jarrett's closest friends. "He is gleefully poaching staff. He has his shotgun on his shoulder and is marching through the White House like it's hunting season. Obama is PO'd. It really pains him to see these people go over to the other side, the dark side." Tune in once again tomorrow, folks, for more of The Dumb and the Feckless. Brought to you today by Cafe Positano, finest Italian restaurant in all of Central Florida. Please go there, folks. They have fine dining, casual dining. You can call and make a reservation, 407-774-8080. You got a party or a banquet? Cafe Positano is the place to go.
And, Chris, I hope people don't think this is a racist statement, but that definitely sounds like the pot calling the kettle black.
Isn't it, though?
Oh, boy.
Isn't it, though? I told you, though, Obama has no intentions of going away. He's going to be a pain in our side for a long time to come. I got this note from Nancy Ludin, who was on our show last
Wonderful
Monday.
Lady.
That's right, folks. And I hope you do will come out to her walk. The Jewish Pavilion's a walk in the park at the end of this month on Sunday, the 26th, I believe it is. And she sent a really nice thank you note for having her on the show, and we appreciate that. But she also stuck in an article that I'd like to go to. It's entitled "PA Daily Praises Israeli Employers," and it's by the Palestinian Media Watch Bulletin, a positive article in the Palestinian Authority's official daily, Al Hayat Al Jadida, September 21st, 2014. Lauded Israel and Israeli employers, that means praised, and Israeli employers of Palestinians for their positive employment ethics towards their Palestinian workers. Let me read that again. They lauded the Israeli and Israeli employers of Palestinians for their positive employment ethics towards their Palestinian workers. At the same time, the article condemned Palestinian employers for taking advantage of their workers. The article explains that Palestinian workers get their full rights when employed by Israelis directly, and that the only time they do not get their full rights is when there is a Palestinian employer middleman. The only cases in which a Palestinian worker does not receive the salary his Israeli employer determined for him are those cases in which the middleman is a Palestinian. So I guess the Palestinian Union is to take your money. But it just once again flies in the face of what the UN says about Israel and what the reality is. It's exactly the opposite.
You know, in a lot of ways, Chris, the UN sounds like they're very much like a lot of Muslim jihadists. I mean, remember, it says in some of their religion that you are supposed to lie and put on the smiley face and say one thing and mean 100% opposite.
Yep.
I sometimes think the UN is guilty of this just as much.
Oh, they are the guiltiest of it. They are the worst of the worst.
And they squeal the loudest,
indeed,
like all pigs.
Indeed they do. Indeed they do. All right, speaking of events, folks, there's a couple I'd like to remind you of. Coming up this Saturday night, that's October 11th, it's going to be the 9th Annual Policy Awards winner, sponsored by the Florida Family Policy Council. You are invited. It's entitled Courage to Stand. Gary Bauer is going to speak. He's a big-time Republican operative and strategist. And our very own Carl Jackson is going to be the MC. So that right there is worth the price of the ticket. By the way, the tickets you can find at flfamily.org. That's flfamily.org. They're $75 a piece. And they do go, all of the funding goes to help Florida Family Policy Council fight the good fight. They've been fighting in courts here in Florida, for instance, against this gay marriage movement. So if you'd like to support them, go to flfamily.org. Also, I would love you to come out or at least be a sponsor for me, because I'll be doing the walk, the Alzheimer's Walk, Walk to End Alzheimer's, a week from this Saturday, which will be the 18th. It'll be downtown at Lake Eola Park. Love you to come out and join. Maybe get some of the folks in your neighborhood at your work or your church or whatever to chip in a few bucks and bring some donations down. Or if you'd like me to do it, get a hold of me by calling the show or emailing me at chrishart@americanadversariesradio.com. I'd love you to join me, but if you can't, like I say, if you can maybe round up a few bucks for me to stop Alzheimer's or at least fund the research a little bit better.
It's not for you. It's for them.
That's exactly right. Okay, folks, once again, thanks for being with us tonight.
Absolutely a wonderful evening. Thanks to you folks and your great calls. And thanks again for Abe Katzman, just the best guy in the world. American Adversaries will be back tomorrow night, Tuesday.